This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your local number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. Inkster Show at WRKF.org online. And we start with Dr. Katara Williams from the Board of Regents. Good morning, Dr. Williams.
Good morning. So glad to be here, Jim.
Well, tell us about Louisiana Online.
Well, we are very excited. About a week ago, the Louisiana Board of Regents launched a new website. It's called LouisianaOnline.org. Basically, it is a hub for all online and hybrid courses throughout the state. We're very excited about this because it is going to be huge and beneficial to our students, especially those who may be non-traditional students, those who may be thinking about going back to school. So through this platform, we actually have it's a comprehensive listing of all online and hybrid programs from all of our systems, whether it be a program under LSU, a program under Southern, a program under UL, or a program under the Louisiana Community and Technical College. So we're really excited about it. We've got 240 degrees, Jim,
that
folks
degrees.
Will be able to choose from. And I mean, of course, it's all about access, making sure that our students have access to instruction in order to improve their quality of life.
It's a one-stop shop for all public universities online and hybrid programs. And to get there, if we log on, how do we do it?
You just go to www.louisianaonline.org. Also, what's most interesting is, you know, a lot of the conversations that's trending right now on a national scale are about providing access to students. It's said that about 60% of jobs nationally will require some form of post-secondary credential. So it's going to be very important that we're making sure that we're giving access to our students. Also, the interesting part about Louisiana Online, every single degree program is there, but there are also access to financial aid resources. You know, we get a lot of calls and questions about, are people able to take advantage of these programs, and how are they paid? Well, they're paid exactly the same as if you were enrolled on a college campus, except it'll either be strictly online or, again, in a hybrid format.
Well, it's a concept that is certainly of the age and of the time. A lot of non-traditional students, I would think, would take advantage of this, probably an older demographic than those generally enrolling in college right out of high school.
You know, we do believe that this is going to be ideal for people who are your non-traditional students, because a lot of times those students have families and just kind of life gets in the way, especially when they start working. You know, it's hard to find the time. However, you know, the majority of people want to better themselves, better their circumstances. And so this would be the way to go. One other thing that I'd like to point out, and you know, which I think is fascinating, is that it's not just for, say, the associate degree level, but it's also for bachelor's degrees, for master's degrees, and for PhDs. So folks can go to Louisiana Online, look at all of the schools that are represented, look at all the programs, and be able to actually see that you can get a PhD online. Or if you're currently working and you want to pursue a master's degree, you can get that online as well.
You can go online and get a degree without ever going to a campus.
Absolutely. You sure can. And, of course, pay for it as well online.
Well, you miss part of the experience, but it is a fast-paced world.
Yes.
And this is, I think, a particular opportunity for those who have jobs and families and other responsibilities that require time.
Yes.
And you might save a lot of time by doing it online.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And even those students who are graduating from high school and maybe want to get a little real world experience prior to moving into higher education, this would be a perfect way to start and understand when they start in this program. If they decide to transition into other classroom platforms, you know, after going through the online some of the online courses, all those credits are transferable, and it's a seamless transition. So it's truly a win-win for those who are interested. And again, you know, with all of the work, the economic developments, development that's coming to the state, and the job opportunities, it's going to behoove all of us to make sure that we have those credentials and those things that are going to make us more marketable.
297-5633. A few more minutes with Dr. Katara Williams from the Board of Regents. And the board has launched Louisiana Online. That's an easy one, louisianaonline.org, a website delivering a simple way to facilitate the location of specific programs and allowing programs to be available to people at home, in their offices, by their computers. And I would think there are some people who would like to combine the college experience,
that's
being
right,
on a campus and doing this. That's possible too, isn't
that
it?
That's what we call our hybrid courses. That's where you may have a couple of courses that you take online, but then if you want that experience, there are going to be some courses where you go into the classroom and you actually experience the culture of that campus environment. So those are very viable options, and again, they're all located on Louisiana Online. Another thing that I wanted to point out, Jim, is on the website there is a tool that's called Smarter Measure, and what it is it's an assessment that measures learner readiness. So if you are thinking about doing an online degree, but you're not quite sure if this is the way, you know, this is the approach that you want to take, there's actually an assessment tool online that will sort of assess your readiness in terms of online degrees. So that's just it's an extra perk for the user to be able to look at their readiness.
A question from Ashley at WRKF.org online, Jim at WRKF.org. Actually, this one came Inkster Show at WRKF.org. Now, to participate, she asks, students still have to be accepted into the particular university.
Yes.
Right? You can't just go on and say, hey, I want to go to LSU and suddenly you're a part of the student body. It's not that simple, is it?
Yes, it is. You still have to, because all of our programs, of course, are accredited. We have to go through the admissions process, and so you do have to be accepted through the normal admissions process and with the normal admissions criteria for each of the different universities. But, of course, you can do all of that online as well. So, again, it is an experience that from start to finish, if you choose, you are able to do pretty much from at the click of your fingers, the stroke of a keyboard. So,
do you see the day when we'll have more students getting their degrees online than on campus?
I definitely see the stats show that, I mean, we've had increasing numbers of students who are choosing to go this route. Now, of course, you still have a nice large amount of students who choose to take the campus method on campus courses, but then there are a lot of those who choose to do to take a mix of courses. But of course, with technology being the way of the future, this is certainly a very attractive option for many students.
And you can go to louisianaonline.org and find out much more, or you can contact the Board of Regents. Telephone number there is
225-342-4253, and we'll be glad to get any information that you need and be able to walk you through some of the processes. There's also some contact information for each of the specific programs that are listed on the Louisiana Online website. That contact is directly to the department of which is providing those degrees, so, and the school, of course. So either way, we can certainly service you and assist our users.
Wonderful. Thank you, Dr. Katara Williams, Assistant Commissioner.
Thank you so much for having me.
And now we're joined by Collis Temple, the legendary basketball pioneer from Louisiana State University by way of Kentwood, who has sired a couple of sons who played basketball at Tigertown as well, and one of whom is now in the NBA, and Garrett Temple, who plays for the Washington Wizards, who are alive and well in the playoffs. And Collis was, in many ways, a surrogate father to Glenn Big Baby Davis, who plays for the Los Angeles Clippers, and his boss is a guy named Donald Sterling. I imagine Big Baby is not too pleased with his boss right now, Collis.
Well, Glenn and I had a conversation on Saturday, And I expressed a couple of things to him. I said, Glenn, you know, if a guy is a quintuplet billionaire, it doesn't allow for him not to have access to the First Amendment right. The First Amendment right is freedom of speech. And it also allows for a person to be as ignorant as he wants to be. And so in his boss's case, this man is very ignorant, and it proves a point that no matter how much money you have, you can't buy intellect. And so, you know, Glenn needs to understand that and move his life forward.
Well, there are sanctions apparently coming from the league regarding Mr. Sterling, who's had this team for 33 years. He's the longest standing NBA owner around. He bought the team for $12.7 million. It's now worth an estimated $600 million, even though the Clippers have been among the worst franchises in all of sports. Sterling has sat on his investment and done very well, and it is his biggest investment for a man who's worth an approximate $2 billion. Dollars, but nobody's, to my knowledge, Collis has said that he couldn't say what he did, but there is often a price to saying the kinds of things he said, and should there be a price? Should he be punished for what he has said?
Candidly, I look at this as a watershed moment in America. This is bigger than Donald Sterling. This is bigger than the NBA. This is bigger than basketball. It's a moment in our existence, just as Jackie Robinson's moment was and just as Jesse Owens' moment was when the Fuhrer refused to shake his hand. What people have to do under these circumstances is take this lemon and make some lemonade and serve a lot more people. Now, what I mean by that is there are 30 NBA teams, and there are 29 people who look like Donald Sterling that own these teams, and one person that looks like Collis Temple, that Michael Jordan, that owns these teams. And I'm sure that Michael Jordan doesn't have this sentiment that this man has. But I'm also sure that there are some other guys who own teams who have the same sentiment that Donald Sterling has. And probably when they shaved this morning, they looked at themselves and they said, wow, this could be me. Now, some folk have said to me, and I had a conversation with my son in Washington the other day. Some folk have said to me, well, you know, Collis, even this morning, they should take his team. They ought to take his team. He ought to really be sanctioned. He ought to be thrown out. Well, I say to those people, he doesn't have to have his team taken. His team has already been taken. His team has already been taken. And so because it has to be bantered and forth here and to and fro about advertisers leaving and all of the shameful things that are taking place in this man's life, fortunately, there are some other men who own NBA teams who have to have their soul purged about disrespecting, mistreating individuals who are in their workforce.
Okay, hold that thought. 297-5633 is your number. 877-217-5757 outside the area. What should be done about Donald Sterling, the flamboyant owner of the Los Angeles Clippers, who has put his foot in his mouth in a big way? This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Michelle Southern is producing today, and Collis Temple is at the ready to talk about Donald Sterling, the owner of the Los Angeles Clippers, who was taped by a girlfriend making statements that were insensitive, particularly to minority groups. And as the owner of the Los Angeles Clippers, Sterling, a former divorce lawyer, has many minorities who work for him who are not pleased at all with the remarks from their boss. And the league itself, the NBA, has to decide whether Sterling loses his franchise, gets sanctioned. Certainly there's pressure from Afar, on Monday, a flurry of advertisers, CarMax, Virgin Airlines, Red Bull, Kia, State Farm, they all suspended ties with the Los Angeles Clippers, and money talks. And today, a column in the New York Times says, exactly 50 years ago, the Beatles declared that money can't buy you love. They hadn't met Donald Sterling. He has a young girlfriend, a beautiful lady who is a minority herself. And apparently Mr. Sterling was not pleased with the fact that his girlfriend was associating with other minorities. And he expressed his points of view, and he was being taped as he said these things. And boom, now he's the talk of the nation. But he's been saying things like this for years. And now at the age of 80, he's getting his comeuppance. Can he survive Collis Temple, or should he survive?
He's in a very challenging situation, obviously. In real terms, when you talk about first, second, third, and fourth quarter, this guy is in the fourth quarter. It's really late in the game. He's in the fourth quarter. He probably will not have an opportunity to play overtime. He probably won't have an opportunity to play overtime because of his insensitive comments and because of the mindset. No super professional guy like Kevin Durant, LeBron James, the Michael Jordan type players, none of them will want to play for this guy. And so consequently, his team will suffer both short-term and long-term if he's involved. And so it's gotten to a point where in reality and in life, when you plant a seed that's not a healthy seed, a plant will come up that's not a healthy plant. And things are finally coming to light in terms of the kinds of seeds that this man, you know, has planted during mm-hmm. his life.
Now, he is of an age not that much younger than Charlie McClendon would have been if he were alive. And you encountered Coach McClendon when you were at LSU. Some would say that the remarks he made at that time to you and to other African-American players were not all that enlightened, but he was part of a different time. He told you not to date white girls, right?
He told me not to date white girls, and I understood based on the time, the circumstances, and where I grew up in Kentwood. I understood his mindset. To be candid with you, my dad told me the same thing, and so I followed suit with my dad's advice, and I followed suit with Charlie McClendon's advice, which is fine. But in real time and in the real sense of it, we're at a different time in life. Neither of those men, my dad and Charlie McClendon, neither of them would have ever believed that Obama would be president. So we're at a different time in life, and time brings about a change, and so that's where we are at this point.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's unlikely at the age of 80 that Donald Sterling's going to change.
He can't.
So
he can't.
So he either stays and is wounded, perhaps stays away from the team, which will be hard for him to do. What happens if they win the NBA title? That would be quite a fiasco.
That would be amazing. But I don't think that as great a coach as Doc Rivers is and as great a player as Chris Paul is, I don't think that they have right now the fortitude, the mental capacity, the state of mind, and the wherewithal to make that happen. I just don't think that their mind is, you know, focused, can be that divided and play at that level and win.
Well, Sterling's remarks are not unique to him. As you say, there are other owners in the NBA who probably feel the same or maybe even more intense in their viewpoints. There are people in this community, there are all kinds of folks in public life who have these kinds of views, but usually they're not taped by their mistresses when they're making these kinds of remarks. And I've heard worse. I've heard worse on this show. Is he being singled out in a way that is fair to him?
Well, fair is what is. Strom Thurmond was in the U.S.
Senate. Governor of South Carolina.
Governor of South Carolina. Had a mistress and or a family that was African-American. And he railed against black folk.
In fact, he supported segregation. Obviously, he supported segregation. That was his only issue in 1948. And he carried Louisiana.
He carried Louisiana.
And yet, he had a black daughter.
That's right.
So he was not in favor of all kinds of segregation.
Absolutely.
There's some kinds he was okay with.
He was very okay with some kind of romantic integration. But
there you go.
Yeah, that's a part of our culture. We have to take advantage of the opportunity to weed out mindsets, eliminate stereotypical mindsets where folk are, and try to break down barriers and move forward. And so in this particular instance, I think it's a watershed moment in our country, in athletics particularly, because, you know, athletics has brought so much attention to so many things that were socially important to this country. And this is one of the moments, mm-hmm. I think.
Well, Sterling was about to get a Lifetime Achievement Award from the NAACP, that despite the fact that he's been sued repeatedly for racial discrimination. He ended one case with a multi-million-dollar settlement, among the largest payouts ever of its kind. He has a history of these kinds of insensitive remarks, but yet he has contributed in a financial way to the NAACP and some causes that presumably are beneficial to minority groups. But can you always just pull out your checkbook and solve a problem like this? Can he buy his way out of this problem?
I don't believe he'll be able to buy his way out of this problem. As I stated, I think he's in the twilight of his years. He clearly is in the twilight of his years. He's in the fourth quarter. He's at the end of the fourth quarter, I think. And I think the game is going to be over for this guy.
Mm-hmm. And his wife is still married to him. They married in the 50s. She has sued the girlfriend, claiming that half of what the lady received belongs to her because of community property. Sterling met this lady at the Super Bowl in Miami when the Saints played the Colts in 2010. So love was in the air when Drew Brees was beating Peyton Manning. She's gotten a lot of money and cars and all kinds of nice things from Donald Sterling. But now she is known in another way and goes by her initial V. And I would imagine the relationship with Mr. Sterling now is somewhat tenuous with V and the owner of the Clippers.
I would imagine the same thing. The reality of it is housewives of L.A. and the housewives of NBA guys and the housewives of this and the housewives. This has to become the number one watched show when it's put on the air and people want to see how this all started and will play out.
It's certainly given the NBA a lot of publicity.
Absolutely.
297-5633 for Kyliss Temple, Inkster Show at WRKF.org. John in New Roads writes, Sterling's assertion that he was feeding and clothing his players is beyond acceptance. This is indeed the plantation mentality that somehow the players are his property. I think that's a good point.
Sure. He said that he was buying them clothes and buying them houses and buying them jewelry and buying them food and giving them. And of course, you know, in the South and other places, wherever you have a plantation, that's what the guy that owns the plantation feels. He says, I'm buying all this stuff. He doesn't look at the fact that these guys are picking cotton. And these guys are jumping and playing basketball. He just thinks that, okay, I'm taking care of these people. And that's this guy's mindset, obviously.
Donna in Capitol Heights. Donna, good morning. You're on the air with Kyliss Temple.
Hi. How can we all get a photo opportunity with Magic?
I guess if you had $2 billion... And it sounds like you would probably need a boyfriend. Mm-hmm. You maybe could get a photo out with Magic's son, but I'm not sure you could get a photo app.
You know, Magic was in Baton Rouge a few weeks ago, and he there is a place here in town that sells sports memorabilia, and you could go get your photo taken with Magic. You had to pay a pretty good amount of money to have it taken, yeah. And he would sign it if you paid a little more money. So.
That's right.
So, Kyliss, my goodness, you should be out signing autographs right now.
I doubt it. I doubt if anybody would want an autograph from me.
297-5633. Michelle, do we have some of the tape, just a bit, from Donald Sterling, who sounds like what he is, an unenlightened old man who's set in his ways isn't going to change, but here's what's gotten him in trouble, a brief snippet of Mr. Sterling.
Does it matter if they're white or blue or yellow?
I guess that you don't know that. Maybe you're stupid. It does matter, yeah. It matters.
People call you and tell you that I have black people on my Instagram, and it bothers you.
Yeah, it bothers me a lot that you want to broadcast that you're associating with black people.
All right, well, he was obviously associating with a black person. He even brought the lady to the game. She sat in the front row.
With his wife
with,
on one side.
Now, that's a different kind of relationship. They do things a little different in Los Angeles sometimes.
Absolutely.
Wouldn't see that in Baton Rouge, I don't think.
I don't think so.
Okay. 297-5633. Still time to get in with Collis Temple, the first African-American to play basketball at LSU. And when he came to Tigertown in 1970, and enrolled at LSU, there were fewer than 100 black students on campus at the old war school. You faced discrimination in the community, didn't you?
It was an unusual time. I faced discrimination from some white folk, and I faced discrimination from some black folk. Some black folk felt I should have gone to Southern, and I shouldn't have gone and played at LSU. And some white folk felt like I shouldn't have come to LSU. Guys like David Duke felt like I was out of place at LSU.
He was on campus at the same time as you?
Yes, he was on campus, and he and I had a few debates.
Free speech alley,
yeah. But it was very interesting and challenging times.
Well, Vanessa LaFleur writes, Collis Temple is speaking truth. So there aren't many people who get on the air and talk about these things, even if they feel the way they do. And I think they do it for a variety of reasons. They refrain from conversations of these kinds, and thank goodness you don't. But number one, it's not a pleasant thing to talk about. And number two, there is still a price to be paid for speaking the truth.
There's a price to be paid. And of course, Jim, you know, there was a price that was paid between 1860 and 1865 in America, the revolution that took place. There were hundreds of thousands of people that died for freedom and some that didn't want to have certain people freed. And there's always challenges. During the Civil Rights Movement in the mid-60s, when you had a guy like Joe Delpit who said, I'll become the first African-American elected to public office in Baton Rouge, he was challenged a great deal by a lot of people. Some people said he was out of his mind, and so he took those challenges and he moved forward. So there's always a price to pay. I mean, Martin King paid the ultimate price. John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, those guys paid the ultimate price. And so there's always a price to be paid when you want to step up and say things that are not necessarily mm-hmm. popular but are truth. And it's just part of...
Well, they say never talk when you're at a party, never talk about religion or politics. But there's one thing that exceeds that, and that's when you start talking about race. People really get edgy when you talk about race.
No question. And I feel so fortunate that I don't have a problem with it. I mean, because in reality, it transcends life. I was telling a guy this morning at breakfast, race is just another thing. It's kind of like air and water, red blood. It's just a part of where we are and what we have to do to survive. You know, water has no color. Air has no color. Blood does have red, and all of us have this red blood running through us as human beings. And so when we put it in that perspective, we can all move forward.
297-5633, still time to talk with Collis Temple about the travails of Donald Sterling, the owner of the Los Angeles Clippers, who, after all is said and done, will still die a billionaire. But he also will die with a stain on his reputation and maybe a justified one. This isn't like an outlier. He's been acting like this for a very long time and talking like this. And unfortunately for him, he had a girlfriend with a tape recorder. And because of that, he is now in hot water. And the NBA could throw him out of the league, but I doubt that that will happen. What do you think will happen?
I don't think that the owners who have to ultimately make that decision will want to set the precedents of throwing one of their guys out. I think that he will be challenged greatly. He will be disciplined and fined and so forth, but that's just the extent of it.
Joe on Bluebonnet, you're on the air with Collis Temple. Hi, Joe.
Hey, how are you, Jim? Hi, Collis, how are you?
Fine.
First, I want to say I agree with everything that Collis Temple has said, and I take pride in saying I was one who encouraged Collis to go to LSU. The late Jerry McKernan brought him to my house, and I knew that he was going to have struggles. I didn't discuss that part with him because of the times. But it's really unheard of in this day and time that this gentleman who, and I'm not gonna dignify him by calling him a gentleman, this a-hole who has achieved a lot on the sweat and back of many African-American and Caucasian and other foreign players' backs to reach some of the wealth that he has, would make such an asinine statement. But I'm very, very proud, Collis, that you're standing up, speaking up. You've contributed so much to many young people, not only in this community, but many, that has gone through the college experience and even high school experience in the athletic world. So keep up the good work, Mr. Temple.
Thank you.
I think we recognize this gentleman, the guy you just mentioned, right?
Yeah, Joe. He's a good friend. He's a mentor for me. And
a pioneer. A
pioneer and a good guy.
Well, recently there was an uproar here in Baton Rouge about our mutual friend Steve Myers putting Section 8 signs in that nice neighborhood around the LSU Lakes, advertising that he would be welcoming Section 8 contributions to rent property in that area. And the unstated issue there is that some poor black people might end up in the neighborhood. And some folks weren't happy about that.
The reality of it is, as we speak to that, the poor, the disenfranchised, the disadvantaged will always be with us. And so the thing that needs to be done as you move towards gentrification in some processes, there has to be consideration for people who want to improve their lives, and so you don't want to shut people out.
297-5633. Back for a few more minutes with Collis Temple after this 90-second pause. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Wherever you are, 877-217-5757. A few more minutes with Collis Temple in 1970. Hard to believe it was 1970, just 44 years ago. He was the first African-American player to play basketball at LSU. He was recruited by Press Maravich, and he did not come here without a full court press by LSU, and they had to even bring in the governor to get you to come, right? John McKithen.
Yeah.
He talked to your father and told him you'd be okay.
That's correct.
He was half right.
Mom and Dad, he was.
Okay.
He was fully right. I was okay.
But when you went to restaurants, I would imagine...
Well, I was turned away. Yeah, I was turned away at certain restaurants and some clubs and some other public establishments. But it all worked out.
Yeah, I remember you saying something, and I'll clean it up. But one place said, "We don't serve blacks," and you said, "That's okay. I don't eat them."
Well, you cleaned it up. I'm gonna straighten it up. One guy told me we don't serve niggas, and I told him I didn't order niggas and I didn't eat niggas. I just wanted a po' boy. So. it's all funny and interesting now, but it was pretty challenging at the time.
Okay. Charles on North Foster. Charles, good morning. You're on the air with Collis Temple.
Good morning, Jim, and good morning, Collis. I think we have to look beyond the obvious implications of what's going on at the L.A. Clippers. I mean, right here in Baton Rouge, there are chemical companies where they've never had African-Americans on the business team. There are some who still have no African-Americans on their executive level or in positions that they consider traditional. When I listen to what this gentleman in L.A. says, a part of me feels bad for him because he's 81 years old and you can tell his heart is still hard. But a part of me says that this is symptomatic of America and that we cannot just address this from a sports perspective. There are many issues that this gentleman has put on the table that we need to come to terms with and hopefully resolve. And I'll hang up and listen.
This is a situation, and that's the point I was making when I said this was a watershed moment for America. Just as things had to change, as Jackie Robinson and guys like the great track star Jesse Owens did, this is a watershed moment in athletics, but it transcends athletics. It moves into education. It moves into the fabric of our community, and we have to discuss things, evaluate circumstances, evaluate situations, and as we move forward, people who are highly intelligent realize that when you're a talented guy, no matter what color you are, no matter what nationality, no matter what gender, when you're a bright person and you are put in a position to be given an opportunity to move forward, it helps everybody. In our world, all boats rise, small and large, when the tide rises. And so when we realize that, things will continue to get better.
Final caller for Collis Temple today, and hopefully Collis will be back soon. Cynthia in Mid-City. Good morning, Cynthia. You're on with Collis.
Hi. I simply wanted to call and thank you, Mr. Thank you for putting this on the air and bringing the topic to the table. That's all I really wanted to call and say. I didn't realize it was going to be on the air.
Okay, well, thank you for your nice words, and I'm sure there's some others who probably wish we hadn't talked about this today, but sometimes you got to talk about things to put a focus on what's really happening.
I'd like to say this to you, Jim. I really appreciate, and I'm sure the greater community appreciates, you feeling that this needs to be brought out and being enlightening to the community is so important. And so, you know, the elephant in the room is race, always. But you're willing to take it on, and I don't have a problem because it's part of life.
It's part of life, and you've lived that life a long time and done it very well. Thank you, Collis.
Thank you.
Take care.
Take care.
297-5633 is your number. And there is a bill that is under discussion at the Louisiana legislature that we're going to talk about a bit in our remaining time today. It's House Bill 1155. It would limit the ability of some providers to gain access to a license from the Department of Health and Hospitals that would allow them to operate a therapeutic group home for children and adolescents with behavioral health disabilities within certain communities in Louisiana. And with us to talk about it, Dr. Rochelle Head Dunham, the Interim Assistant Secretary for the Office of Behavioral Health under the Department of Health and Hospitals. And she'll be joined in a few moments by David Precise, who's been with us before, who is with the National Alliance of Mental Illness, Louisiana. Good morning, Dr. Dunham. Good to see you. Well, tell us about this bill. What do you think?
Well, good morning. And we have many concerns about House Bill 1155, which seeks to limit the ability of some providers to gain access to a license from the Department of Health and Hospitals that would allow them to operate a therapeutic group home for children and adolescents with behavioral health disabilities, addiction and mental illness within certain communities in Louisiana. In order to do that, it would require that any potential operator notify and seek approval of the local governing authority, such as a parish council, before it can actually obtain a license. So at its core, the bill is aimed at keeping children and behavioral health disabilities out of certain neighborhoods
that don't want them. What was the motivation for the bill in your judgment?
The motivation behind the bill, as we appreciate it, is to limit having certain disability types within a certain neighborhood. Therapeutic group home model is a home-based model for children with mental illness. They may have an addictive disorder. In any case, these are kids who have been abused or in families that have been problematic. And so the therapeutic...
This is one of those so-called NIMBY bills, not in my neighborhood. Is that what's behind this?
Exactly. Stated as such.
Well, why, and maybe David Precise would be good to talk about this, why is there this stigma that people with mental illness are somehow not good neighbors?
Well, I think from the testimony I heard last week, last Wednesday in the House Health and Welfare Committee, I mean, it was stated multiple times by Representative Dorothy Sue Hill and her two constituents that they have a fear of the unknown. And there's, I think, movies, the media in a lot of parts portray people with mental illness as dangerous and violent, when it's, you know, this population is no more violent than the three of us sitting right here. That's one of the big pieces that I work for with NAMI is we try to educate the public, because this is a topic that's been taboo, that people haven't wanted to discuss. They're uncomfortable with it. But, you know, people need to know that people that live with a mental illness are five times more likely to be the victim of a violent crime than to commit one. And often people just fully or become reclusive and pull away from society. But, you know, at the same time, if you talk about actors and actresses, I mean, Catherine Zeta-Jones and Carrie Fisher, that played Princess Leia in Star Wars, both live with severe mental illnesses, and they've done just fine.
They've done just fine, and they have the money to live wherever they wish. And House Bill 1155 would limit providers as far as these therapeutic homes. How many people are we talking about as far as those who would be affected by this?
The therapeutic group homes are licensed to house up to 8 children. And those 8 children require management of at least 2 certified professionals on site at all times. They're also under the direction of licensed mental health professionals, including social workers, psychiatrists, psychologists. These are clinical environments for kids who typically have behavioral health issues and have been victims, basically, of societal issues within their home environment. The intent is really to place them in a healthy environment where they have opportunity or maximum opportunity for growth and development, just as any of our other kids would have who have not been victims of mental illness.
All right. Well, the sponsor, I think, is Dorothy Sue Hill, a Democrat from Dry Creek, former location of James David Cain. I think he still lives there. That's the place he represented. But has she indicated her motivation? Did somebody contact her, or is she affected by this in some way? What's her reasoning for sponsoring the legislation?
Well, our appreciation, based upon her testimony and some of the conversations the department has had with her, is that there are a lot of concerns that are unfounded based upon the population that we're talking about needs to get services in that area, and based upon the difficulties that these individuals who would come into her area would have. So a lot of misinformation about what the potential provider would be bringing to the community. These homes basically blend into the network of a community and really don't stand out in any way, nor do they pose a threat to the community.
Mm-hmm. 297-5633 is your number. Dr. Rochelle Head Dunham from the Department of Health, who is with the Office of Behavioral Health, and David Precise for the group NAMI Louisiana. Now, Dr. Dunham operated a solo practice in New Orleans for 15 years, so you have encountered this in a different kind of way. You're not speaking without experience on this subject.
Exactly. My life's career has been dedicated to helping people who have mental illness and addictive disorders to have access to the same rights and privileges as all of the rest of us have. And so this type of bill really does limit our ability to expand the network of services that are available to individuals.
Now, do you think people are perhaps concerned about having any kind of place of operation that is not a residential location in their neighborhoods? Is that part of this, or is it just directed toward the perception that people with mental illness might be a problem?
Well, the emphasis of the testimony and the conversations have centered around mentally ill individuals in particular. In fact, it was stated that it would be okay if these individuals had a developmental disorder, but a mentally ill, violent youngster in our neighborhood is not acceptable.
Now, there are 14 children, I'm told, in 2 homes in Baton Rouge right now.
Correct.
Do you know where these homes are located?
The exact location I don't have available to me right now.
Have there been any problems?
None reported to health standards. In fact, our health standards division testified to that there have been no reported problems. Mm-hmm.
Now, David, there are various kinds of mental illness. There are various kinds of autism. There are various kinds of heart disease. Some are more serious than others. Some can be controlled by medication. Others maybe not. So to blanket everything in one fell swoop as mental illness might be unfair too.
Absolutely. I think, a couple of things I would say, the people, I completely understand how this bill came about. There's a basic human fear of the unknown. So, but with just a little bit of education, people will realize the youth that they're talking about, 21% of youth aged 13 to 18 live with mental illness is severe enough to cause significant impairment in their day-to-day lives. These adolescents already live in Allen Parish, where this bill originates. They may not be diagnosed. About 50% of children and 70% of adults never receive treatment, and that's largely due to our population being uneducated. But there's most certainly, to your question, there's different levels of severity, and when someone is in psychosis with bipolar disorder or schizophrenia, it's going to be very obvious, and they're going to be taken somewhere.
All right. Well, Elliot asked if this bill could be a violation of the Fair Housing Act.
Absolutely. It's both a violation of the Fair Housing Act as well as the Americans with Disabilities Act, both of which had as its intention to avoid the opportunity for such disparities or discrimination to be lodged against individuals who have behavioral health disabilities.
Well, nationwide, are there similar kinds of engagements going on as far as this being a factor in legislative maneuvers?
Not at a point where I can point to it specifically, but I think what is pervasive around the country is, as David said, misperceptions about people who are mentally ill. And from that often spurns laws or litigation that specifically speaks to the discrimination that people often then unintentionally or intentionally engage in trying to control where those individuals can and can't.
Now, there was a case in Maryland in the 90s and one in Michigan, I think, a year later in 94. And both of those are somewhat related to House Bill 1155. Will these be used if it gets this far? Is any kind of precedent as far as determining whether or not this bill is constitutional?
Exactly. And in those cases, the court ruled that the county could not require notification of neighbors and civic organizations before a group home was open. They said that the requirement was facially invalid and rejected the county's argument that the notice was intended to better integrate the home's residents into the community by providing a dialogue between providers and the neighborhood. The court determined that the county was assuming that individuals with disabilities were different than individuals without disabilities and therefore had to take extra steps to become part of the community.
Where is this bill in the process right now?
Well, currently it is scheduled to be heard on the floor of the House today. We're not sure.
That's this afternoon, I guess.
Exactly. And we're not sure whether or not those proceedings will take place. We're hoping that we can work with Representative Hill to address this differently and more appropriately, but that's yet to be determined. Mm-hmm.
It is interesting, though, that it is a lawmaker from Dry Creek. Not in my backyard goes, it has different meaning for Dry Creek than it does for Baton Rouge or New Orleans. Mm-hmm. But full legislature will, at least full House, will weigh in on it today, and we'll see where it goes. And we thank you for your time today. Thank you, David Precise. Good to see you again. National Alliance for Mental Illness in Louisiana. And Dr. Rochelle Head Dunham from the Department of Health, Assistant Secretary for the Office of Behavioral Health. Nice to talk with you as well. And we'll be back tomorrow. Until then, for Michelle Southern, I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Inkster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.